Hello, I'm Rafik, and you're watching the Garbled Twistery Channel.
What is the song of the stuffed quail? Yes, it's Garbled Twistery. And what's on this 1824 VP candidate election menu today? Oh, it's a guy we just keep hearing about. No, really, he's been meddling this whole time through multiple administrations. His name? Al Gelatinous. Yeah, we're talking about that man today. So, Abraham Alphonse Albert Gelatinous was born in Geneva, Switzerland. Yeah, that's a change of pace, all right. His parents had, like, a whole bunch of money, and their names were Jean and Sophie. Oh, and his family was super rich and powerful. Like, they were basically running Geneva. But whatever, that doesn't matter, because now his parents are dead, and he's an orphan living with some lady named Mademoiselle Picture Frame. And she was a family friend, you know? Distant relative or whatever. So yeah, Al's rich, but ends up at the Academy of Geneva, which also happens to be indisputably one of the best universities on the planet. So he's out there, and he's reading his RuPaul and his Voltaire, and then he became disillusioned with his government or whatever, because he started believing people are inherently good when they have freedom and stuff. So when he heard about the U.S. bragging about how super free they were, the gelatin man was all like, who needs Geneva? I'm moving to Burger Town. So, Al calls up his boy Henry and is all like, quote,
hey, I have a secret plan. Do you want to secret plan with me? It's a secret,
unquote. And of course Henry's all in. Operation Escape to Burger Town is a go. They collected a whole bunch of recommendation letters from a bunch of bougie Americans like Ben Pancakes, and they left in the middle of the night on a U.S. ship that everyone called the Cat Dog. Essentially, these boys were
alone in the world with a little cat dog.
So they showed up in Annie's cape and rode some horses to Boston for like 30 miles, and Al lived there with his buddy for a while. But he soon realized that people in Boston are either too boring or not boring enough, so he moved to Maine. I know, right? Perfect compromise. And what was Mr. Gelatinous doing in Maine? Running a merchant scam, of course, but hey. At least he got to commune with the trees and the occasional whale, I guess. Oh, and his buddy Henry was there, you know, helping to scam people too. But whatever. Their scam was eventually found out, so they moved back to Boston. Speaking of moving, how do you think that Mademoiselle and her friends handled it when they found out Fat Albert snuck off on a boat in the middle of the night and landed in America? Well, they got him a job as a French tutor at Harvard, of course. If you forgot how rich this man's friends and family are, there's your reminder. So, Albert was living in New England and hating it. Yeah, he wasn't about that clam chowder life. Al wanted to be doing farmer stuff in the Appalachians. That was his passion. And how did Mr. Gelatinous follow this passion? Well, he teamed up with some fancy-pants French land speculator man to help out and be a Rosetta Stone translator. No, really, he was just bumming around with some dude named Jean Savagery buying up land. Sooner or later, Al realizes that he forgot to become a citizen because he was having so much fun bumming around. So what does he do? He stops by Virginia and is all like, quote, if Virginia needs me in a pickle, I'll be there, unquote. Boom. Instant citizenship. Times were easier back then. But also, don't forget that this man has money and power. Speaking of money and power, a year after his overnight citizenship, Albert receives a freaking inheritance and buys 400 acres of Pennsylvania land with it because why not? Money is no object. Build a house. Call it Friendship Hill. Found a company. Try and get your Swiss friends to settle. They don't come? Oh well. But enough with the economics banter. What about this man's gelatinous love life, huh? Well, he married a girl named Sophia Algeria. She died like half a year into it, though, and Al got really, really, really sad about it, and he literally almost just went straight home to Geneva. He did eventually recover and got married to Jack Nicholson's ancestor, Hannah Nicholson. They had like six kids, Hannah Marie Rose, Sophitia, Albert Rolly, James and the Giant Peach, Francois, and Kathy. Half of them didn't even last a year on this earth, so yeah, it's rough in these bourgeois streets. Oh, and of course, Al got immediate political connections and a little bonus to his already stuffed wallet from this marriage. I mean, come on now. Al did lose a boatload of money making terrible business decisions, though, and had to sell, like, almost all his land to some founding father figure named Bobby Morris and retreating to Philly with his tail between his legs. But enough about that personal stuff. Let's get to the nitty-gritty. Let's talk politics. What was the Jellyman's deal? Well, it all started way back when the states were looking at the Constitution to make sure it looked okay. They made sure to offer Mr. Gelatin a penny for his thoughts. And they really liked his spunk, so he ended up in the Pennsylvania House of Reps. And he spent a lot of time hanging out in Philly and throwing shade at those Federalists. He was also on the local How Are We Going to Deal with All This Money committee, and he must have learned his lesson from his terrible business deals, because he seemed to be doing a great job handling that. So now that Al has gotten a taste of that good old power and fame, he's gonna run for the big boy Senate. And oh, would you look at that? He won, as expected. And he showed up in a tornado, too, yelling at Alexammy Hammy Tammy, gossiping about that man's economic plans. Too bad he couldn't stick around. Yeah, Mr. Gelatinous got kicked out of the freaking Senate. Leave it to the Transportation and Safety Administration to look into how Albert over here hasn't even been a citizen for 9 years yet and therefore had zero business being a whole senator. And it was a big freaking deal too. You see, the Senate usually would have like closed sessions like 24/7, but they couldn't have a closed session for kicking Mr. Gelatin out because it would look too much like that Disney film, The Aristocats, and nobody wanted to look like an aristocrat. We just fought a war about this. So instead, the Senate had an open session and decided to keep having open sessions on a regular basis so as to not appear too bougie. Anyways, Gelatin gets kicked out of the big boy Senate and he goes home. And then he hears all these rumblings about some kind of alcohol tax or something. And he's thinking, hold on, didn't we just fight a whole war about taxes? And he's watching from his window as all these farmers are taken to the streets with their pitchforks over this tax. And then Jorge Washington shows up on a freaking horse with an army. And Albert's just sitting there in his house like, quote, what in the world? Jorge, that was extra. You're doing too much, Mr. President. If you pull a stunt like this again, this country is more finished than a homework assignment you decided to complete a week early and forgot it was even in your backpack when it was due, unquote. What can I say? This man has a point. It was one of those situations where he was totally on the farmer's side, but he didn't like how they were going about it because he's a quote-unquote moderate, so he tried to calm them down instead of grabbing the conveniently placed pitchfork. Anyways, after that fiasco, the Gelatinous Man ends up in the House of Reps, and he literally became the guy on Mad Money. Seriously, everybody deferred to him when it came to the money and whether they should be mad about it. Well, not everybody, just the Democrat-Republicans, so basically everybody, lol. But yeah, he published this whole essay dragging those Federalists to filth and gossiping about how they don't know how to do anything with money whatsoever. You know, experts say that this schmuck actually founded the whole What Are We Supposed to Do with Money committee just to get on Alexandy Hammy Tammy's nerves. But some guy named Patty Furlong thinks that the Federalists were actually the ones who founded that. But whatever, whatever. Billy Madison is all like, quote,
I don't want to do this president thing again. It's giving me hives,
unquote. So, you know what that means? That's right. Gelatinous is the big man on campus now. When it comes to the House of Rep, Democrat-Republicans, Gelatinous is leading the pack. And what exactly were this man's opinions? Well, when that not war, this is not a war, I swear, happened with the baguettes, Gelatin thought we were spending way too much dough on the freaking military, and he was really not about Johnny A. trying to make sure the Irish immigrants can't vote against the Federalists, Gelatin being an immigrant himself. When the Fancy Pants 1800 election came around, though, Gelatin was one of Tommy J's wingmen. He helped that fool win like nobody's business. And of course, Tommy Pickles is gonna help out his money man by letting him guard the national treasure from Nicolas Cage during the presidency. Yeah, it was Mr. Gelatinous and Billy Madison who were Tommy J's homeboys. They never left that man's side. He trusted them with his life. Whenever the government was on summer vacation, Gelatin was the guy who made sure the government was at least casually operating. Yeah, he was trusted that much. He even got a say in how Tommy's speeches would sound and what the policy was gonna look like. When Tommy J decided to make it so that the government wasn't allowed to tax anybody anymore, Gelatin was the guy who was like, quote, "Money don't grow on trees and you're not gonna let your treasurer grow a tumor," unquote. Speaking of not getting tumors, what was Gelatin trying to do as a treasurer, hmm? Well, the usual stuff. Lower them taxes, lower that spending, lower that debt. All the Democrat Republicans were real worried about that debt, to be honest. It was like $83 million of freaking debt. And through some forbidden extreme couponer no jutsu, somehow, Mr. Gelatin cut that in half in a little over a decade. I bet you're wondering, what is this man's money-saving secret, hmm? Well, according to Gelatin himself, it's literally snuffing out corruption wherever it's hiding. Quote,
"The only reason why everything is expensive is because y'all are too greedy. Spoil brats everywhere."
Unquote. But yeah, Gelatin was a busy man, okay? He was cutting that alcohol tax. He was making sure the U.S. wasn't wasting its money on boats that have cannons. He even was the money man who arranged everything when Neapolitan ice cream sold like a third of the continent to the U.S. Oh, and he and Tommy Pickles were really happy with getting New Orleans. Like, that was a game changer. Now there's access to real food. When Tommy J thought he needed to create a whole new amendment to make the Louisiana Purchase legally okay, Gelatin was there to tell him that what people don't know won't kill them. Oh, and remember Penn and Teller? Gelatin even helped them with their expedition into the unknown. And of course, after that, Albert was the guy who was selling land like it's pancakes. There used to be 4 land offices. By the time Gelatinous was through, there were freaking 18. Big boy Congress ended up having to make a big old general land office to handle all this land selling. And Gelatin was also the guy who was building all this infrastructure. New roads, new canals, west of Appalachia. It was all Gelatinous. He wrote an essay about these roads and canals too, talking about, "I need 20 million buckaroonies just so America can drive to the grocery store." He wanted canals in Cape Cod. He wanted canals in the Divapara Peninsula. He wanted canals in the Great Dismal Swamp. Gelatin wanted a road that would start in Maine and end in freaking Georgia. He wanted to connect the Hudson River to the Great Lakes. And don't forget Charleston, too. This man had ambitions, I tell ya. And the Democrat Republicans were looking at him like he was crazy. You want $20 million to do what? Do you know what year this is? The tea sippers are about to fire cannons on us again, and you want to use the taxpayer dollars to build canals? Get a grip, man! So that infrastructure bill didn't happen. Sorry, bro. But Mr. Gelatinous was able to get some money to build a national road. Yes, that national road that got its own episode like forever ago. Gelatin Man was in charge of that. And a lot of stuff Mr. Gelatin wanted is actually going to be carried out, just not all at once and not always on the federal government's dollar. Anyways, as you know, during Tommy J's Iron Throne time, the Neapolitan ice cream was ripping bones apart in Europe, and the tea sippers and baguettes were both trying to just make sure the U.S. couldn't trade with the enemy, and it was getting real stressful, okay? Man Ray was sent to try and renew that Jay Treaty, and he did such a good job that Tommy rejected the deal because it made Man Ray look too good around election time, even though it probably would have prevented an entire war from happening, but whatever. Lo and behold, the tea sippers gunned down a whole U.S. ship because there wasn't any contract binding them not to when there could have been, and this led to Tommy J doing this massive embargo where nobody was trading with anybody, and Mr. Gelatin was shouting at him like, dude, this is a mistake, but Tommy didn't freaking listen. Gelatin had to carry out this embargo that he didn't agree with at all against smugglers specifically, who were like, quote, who needs the law when we have both friends and boats, unquote. And the embargo didn't even work. All it did was make everybody mad at Tommy. That said, Tommy was still able to finagle his buddy Billy Madison onto the Iron Throne in 1808. So, Billy Madison is the big man on campus now, and he wants Mr. Gelatin to be the secretary in charge of all the states. And Congress is all like, dude, no, he's the money man. Let him keep handling the money. You must not know about him. And Billy Madison, who's just trying to have an agreeable presidency, was like, fine, you win. He'll keep guarding the treasure. He's the money man. Instead, some schmuck named Bobby Smith got that sweet secretary job, and Mr. Gelatin really wasn't about it. Especially because Bobby Smith's brother and some journalist named Billy Duane were constantly writing all kinds of trash about Mr. Gelatin and the Philadelphia Aurora Monroe. The man couldn't take it. He almost resigned, but Billy Madison kept our guy sane and he didn't quit his job. So to that I say, nice save, bro. Anyways, Mr. Gelatin writes another essay in 1810 titled, Where's My $20 Million? I Still Want to Build Some Canals! Which was met by a bunch of people looking at him like, oh, there he goes again. He couldn't even get Congress to, like, renew the lease on the National Bank. I mean, I know Tommy J hated it because he hated Hammy Tammy, who was responsible for building it, but it's still just a bank. Like, can somebody please throw the treasurer a bone here? It regulates currency. It helps with government funds, but whatever, they still got rid of it. I mean, the vote was narrow, but Gelatin still lost, and he really was pretty mad about it, too. Like, Mr. Gelatin wrote this whole letter to President Billy Madison all like, quote, this is an outrage. I'm the treasurer, and you took away a national bank? I'm out of here. I'm packing my bags, unquote. Interestingly, Billy Madison straight up fires Bobby Smith or whoever the state secretary was and replaces him with Man Ray. And after seeing this change, Mr. Gelatin's like, wait, hold on, unpacking my bags, I think I can work with this. In other news, when that stupid everything embargo was thrown into the trash, Mr. Gelatin was the guy who had to start getting the trade going again. But not all at once, okay? Like, trading on boats, we're not all the way back to that just yet. And then in 1811, Congress was all like, yo, we wrote a bill and you can choose either the baguettes or the tea sippers to start trading with all over again, depending on who's going to let us keep being neutral amidst this Neapolitan nonsense. But yeah, that didn't work. The tea sippers kept pulling nonsense, so the War of 1812 was straight up declared. And guess who ended up having to do some money magic tricks without a freaking national bank during a war? Yup. Mr. Gelatin. And if you think the state banks are patriotic enough to loan the government some money for this war, you got another thing coming. Gelatin had to raise taxes, he had to sell federal assets to the Silicon Valley giants to pay for the war. It wasn't pretty. The national debt shot up from $45 million to $127 million freaking dollars over the course of 4 years. Four! It's crazy, I tell ya. So, 1813 comes around and Mr. Gelatin is in Billy Madison's oval-shaped office and Billy's like, quote, that war stuff was hectic, man. Hey, I like you. You're very gelatinous. You need a vacation. You're going to Russia. That's it. I've decided. Take a load off. But also, please negotiate a peace deal. I'm losing my mind here. Unquote. So Gelatin went with the four other Power Rangers, Clayman, Barnyard, Johnny, Rusty, and the Quincy from Bleach. Too bad the negotiations completely collapsed and they were stuck on the other side of the world waiting to try and get back to the negotiation table. Some guy named George, who drinks Campbell's tomato soup, was picking up the treasure guarding slack while Gelatin was gone. Finally, the town of Gout was chosen, and the Power Rangers were talking things out with the tea sippers in Belgium for like 4 months straight. I mean, the tea sippers were tired of fighting too. So yeah, the Gout Treaty was signed and everything went back to normal. Okay, sure, it didn't say anything about the whole kidnapping sailors thing, but the T-Sippers weren't gonna need to do that anymore anyway, because they're about to drain that Neapolitan ice cream down the Waterloo. But yeah, everybody was super impressed with how Gelatin was handling the treaty-making process. He was making deals like he was doing it his whole life or something. He was able to get the tea-sipping trade going after the war. He was glad the treaty got in the way of the Native American ambitions because how dare they think they own land. And he thought the war, while it was tough, taught everybody that nothing is free, so stop being selfish and pay your taxes. Pay your stupid taxes! And that's a hard lesson to teach. Silver linings, people. So Mr. Gelatinous comes back from his treaty-making vacation, and Billy Madison's all like, yay, my treasurer's back! And Albert's all like, no he ain't, I'm done, okay? And I'll help y'all make a second national bank because I'm still mad about the first one, but I'm thinking I might enter the private sector with my Silicon Valley Astor Place buddy here. But that didn't happen because he just couldn't pass up the opportunity to vacation in France as an ambassador. And he stayed in that job for like 7 years. Yeah, the Gelatin fam just freaking loved Paris that much. He didn't like how the monarch people were trying to just reverse everything Neapolitan ice cream did, but that was a minor qualm. So yeah, he was getting things done too, of course. Like, he helped get the Rutabaga Treaty and another treaty that happened 18 in order. You know, the ones that opened up Oregon country and tied some loose ends from the second Great American Temper Tantrum. So yeah, Mr. Gelatin comes back to the States, and this 1824 something or other is about to happen. And Billy Crawford needs a running mate, you know? Mr. Gelatin's been doing a whole lot of work, like he was there for everything. So yeah, the Jell-O Man's chances of nabbing that VP spot are looking quite high, if I don't say so myself. The man's a powerhouse! He's a powerhouse! He was there for everything. If you've got something to say about this episode, about the podcast, or about, I don't know, Paletot, you can find Garble Twistery on Facebook and Twitter, or you can head to garbletwistery.net and send a message in the contact section, or you can email moi. My email's Rafiq, that's R-A-F-I-Q at garbletwistery.net. Also, I have a Patreon, so if you go to patreon.com and find Garble Twistery, you'll gain not only the access, but the ability to determine what topics get to be Patreon-exclusive bonus content, and the bonus I'm finagling right now is a bonus on the history of throwing cards at people melodramatically. Sounds fun, right? Anyways, next time, it's another new guy with big potential for nabbing that vice principal role. It's Martini Van Berlini. Get high.
This is the ending. I'm ending it now.
I need 20 million buckaroonies just so America can drive to the grocery store.